Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only.
Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 26 now of Metaverse Musings. I know there's been a few week gap since the last one, and many of you are wondering if progress in the metaverse has stalled altogether, but I can assure you it hasn't. And we've got a very exciting guest today. Very excited to introduce you all to Mark Lawson, who is the founder and CEO of Brightstar Studios, who are building a game called Embersword. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks, Pierce.
To start us off, I guess so we're all on the same page, could you tell us kind of as simply as possible, what is Embersword?
Of course. I mean, if you want the short one, I mean, Embersword is kind of a big thing, but it's an MMORPG, a massive multiplayer online role-playing game. The idea is that we're making this huge world where players can kind of own and run parts of it and also get something out of it. To put it in a really, really short one, any MMORPG you kind of had in the past, they had value in terms of what they generate of players' time, in terms of what they own in the game, of items or skins, stuff like that. And those are the kind of things that we're putting on the chain to make it more accessible and kind of allow users to draw benefit of what they, in my opinion, at least always have been doing. This just hasn't really been allowed for other reasons than I would say gameplay.
Absolutely. Could you give us a quick summary of your personal background as well prior to founding Brightstar, and then I guess we'll jump into the game.
Of course. Yeah, so I pretty much been in games all my life. I mean, I started out on what's called like a Texas Instruments I-99, which is it's quite a long time ago, in the start of the 80s. Then I've been all the way up through like a Commodore, Amiga, all those things, the first like bulletin broadbands, where you had to like call another phone number to kind of load up a web page, like the early internet and stuff like that. So kind of been here all the time, been building websites and other small things. I started out in esports when I was quite young. Used to play for a team in Denmark called Spirit of Amiga. We were top four in the world for a short while. Used to attend a bunch of events all over the world, what's called like CPL back in the day. We played Counter-Strike. Then from that, I kind of transitioned to playing an MMORPG called World of Warcraft, and helped create two teams called the Helium and Insidia, where we actually were number one. And one of them were actually number one for 2 years and 3 months, I believe, which is quite a long time. We actually defeated all events in-game and offline, actually was crowned number one in the world, or the best guild worldwide, by Blizzard. And we actually did a bunch of events for them in Paris, like the Worldwide Invitational, not a bunch of stuff in Germany for them, at the Gamescom, all that stuff. From that, then jumped over to being good at games and being a pro player and all that stuff. I kind of thought, you know, why shouldn't I also build games? So I jumped into making mods and making some of the games. Made a couple of games there that's been on Steam. I was involved in the IO game scene. If you know some of those IO games, where the idea is that you can kind of go into a game within 5 seconds and just load. You don't need an account, anything like that. There are games like Agario and Slither. Probably some people here heard about those. I was involved in that, and then from that kind of took all the experience into Embersword, which is what we're making today.
Awesome. That sounds like
right.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I guess could you give us some color on like what exactly motivated the build out of Embersword? Where did the inspiration to go with the sort of crypto component come from? Love some color around that.
Of course. One of the things, of course, is that, I mean, you have always had a quite big market for these items that you trade in the game. So like all or skins in a way, or the looks. So World of Warcraft, at least I was a part of, and I know this is against the Yule and all that stuff like that. I was a part of facilitating some of these trades, but I know a lot of people were, and some of these trades were worth a lot, like, you know, $75,000 or more. And at least some of the idea came from that, you know, why not just allow people to do this? Because I know from World of Warcraft that there were like guilds pretty much specialized in taking people on their like raids and or playtime and give them stuff, and then they would pay for it, you know, because otherwise they wouldn't really be able to acquire it. And I mean, even today, you see some of these guilds popping up in crypto that kind of want to play and facilitate all these things. So in my mind, at least, it's always been here. We're just able to draw from this now because of blockchain.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. So could you walk us through sort of which aspects of the game have integrated crypto components? You know, I'm aware of a sort of land-based element, but also NFTs for cosmetics. Would love to get a bit more color on what exactly the crypto dimension looks like for the game.
Of course. I mean, in terms of the crypto stuff, of course, we have two elements. So we have the NFTs and we have the coin, of course. The coin, we haven't really talked much about yet. We had one first, then we got rid of it. Because what we figured out was, at least way back then, so we started out in 2018. I think we were pretty much some of the first to even announce something like MMORPGs with blockchain, et cetera. And what we figured out at least was that there was kind of like a barrier to the game. And for us, gameplay has always come first. No, we want the game to be seamless. We don't want it to be annoying. We don't want you to do a bunch of stuff to get in and play. So at least for the coin part, we're doing that again. We're going to introduce them more, but I can't really get too much into detail about it right now. In terms of the NFTs, though, what we're doing there, of course, is that, you know, we're making scars, the tradable cosmetics. We're not making items tradable in terms of like the actual weapon, but the look of it. You're able to trade things like hats or skins or textures, even stuff like furniture, all these kind of different things like a pit or the look for a pit, or pretty much anything in that range in sort of like vanity or stuff like that would be able to go on some sort of NFT. And then in that, for us at least, what we're like focused on is that nothing is pay to win. There's no loot boxes and there's no like predatory monetization as you see in other games.
Could you, you know, if you can't dig too far then into the crypto side of things just yet, perhaps you could shed some light on the sort of lore and the world that this game is set in.
Of course. Well, I mean, I could go a bit into about the land, of course. So the whole thing about owning land, how that kind of works with NFTs. So around all these capitals, if you envision like a diamond shaped map, in the middle of that, there would be a capital. And around that capital, people would be able to buy the land around it and then evolve it. So if you take some other game, again, let's just take World of Warcraft. This is an easy one. I guess a lot of people have kind of played it. You could see NFT capitals like Stormwind or Aggramant, those, and it didn't really change much in like a decade or over a decade. And that is the idea for kind of letting players own this land around it and actually mold the game world. So kind of more like supply and demand. And then how the crypto plays into that is that if you're a landowner, you could have a piece of land, you could place something like an auction house or marketplace, something like that. And every time some user actually comes to that place and uses it, you would get a fee of whatever, you know, that person is trading. And that is kind of the main idea of the land. So you kind of attract people to the land by building gameplay features, but you also build these other features that kind of like facilitate our services, but we let the players kind of sell them for us instead, kind of more involving in the game world. And we feel that it creates more of I would say like a real game world, a more living game world. Mm-hmm. But all the fees in that would be in the crypto.
Very cool. I kind of anticipate that some of the large landowners in this game may well turn out to be these sort of, you know, the investment DAOs that we're going to see form around sort of video games. Not sure whether you're familiar with projects like Yield Guild, but if you are, I would be curious if you have any thoughts behind that sort of model and where those things are going, because that's an area I'm super excited about.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think it's super awesome that people are actually doing this. I think it's a great idea. If I'm thinking back on what I played in other MMOs, I think that the notion what these guys are actually doing has always been here. It's more about that now we actually have the chance to kind of facilitate it, because these new games aren't fighting against its own players. We're embracing what people are already doing, what people are already doing out in the communities. And I think that's just great. And I think this is going to evolve more. I think we're going to see more guilds kind of doing this. If I'm again thinking back to one of my own teams, actually what we did when we sold some of these like skins in the game, we would use that money to kind of like, have a get together in one of these different countries in Europe and have everybody come together and kind of have fun, hold a little party and stuff like that. And of course, this would be more business related, I'd say. But the concept is sort of the same. It's just more serious, I'd say.
That's really neat. Yeah. getting together, doing get-togethers after, you know, guild-related activities. It is nuts. I think the report I read, there was this Juniper research report showing that it was like, you know, like $17 billion in sort of value locked in these closed ecosystems, right, that are basically getting traded on these sort of gray markets and stuff, as I'm sure you would have been aware of back in the WoW days.
Oh, yeah.
I totally agree. Notion's always been there, but now the tech to really streamline and kind of facilitate it in its truest form is here. So excited for that.
I just wanted a quick notice on that though. It's just because I have a really great story always that was mentioned to me once. Was it's a game called Path of Exile. There's a couple there which sells like a bunch of the items, I believe, in one of these forums. It's like these huge trading forums that exist that, you know, people really don't know about unless you're kind of in these communities. But enough people there who actually sold as many items, so they could actually buy houses, you know, they kind of funded their lives, sort of. So I would say the interest and the market is definitely there, I should say.
Absolutely, yeah. So jumping back a bit, I guess it would be cool if you could give us an overview on as I say, the lore and the world that Embersword's set in.
Of course. So it's one, like, huge, seamless world. Basically, there's four nations. They're called Solarwood, Duskeron, Idiso, and Severin, and Idiso. So Idiso is the fourth one. Solarwood is kind of like the green lush area. Duskeron is the red desert and kind of like the mercenary types and the PvP types. Severin is the biomes, is jungle, is led by a female called the Wisp. He's sort of the rebel that's fighting there. And then we have Idiso, which is more like the ruling bodies, is the Republic. It's more like the Nordic kind of Vikings-ish types. And those are the ones who kind of have a mandate on the world. So basically the whole world, Fenibus, all these people in it, they don't really remember their past. So, and they kind of butch up into these kind of different factions here, and they're kind of even trading or fighting each other and trying to find out what is the history, because they had this sort of catastrophe way back in the day that kind of undid everything. And to them, technology is kind of like magic. They don't really understand it, but it's still there, you know. It's kind of that thing, you know, mm-hmm. something that's so advanced that you don't get it, people think it's magic.
Yeah. That's super exciting.
It's a super heavy story, I'd say. We have a really good scriptwriter, Samuel Butto. He's done a bunch of writings for Hollywood, and he's been like this really extensive lost story behind it. And there's like a lot of stuff to dig in.
I'm so excited for it. What was the name of the jungle biome?
Severin.
Nice. That was the most appealing to me off the bat. So we'll see how that evolves. So you know, you obviously opted to go for this sort of free-to-play, sort of platform agnostic MMORPG. You know, from what I've read online, it combines elements from a variety of games. I should note that I'm pretty disappointed that the RuneScape legacy wasn't continued with capping levels at 99 instead of 100. But could you touch upon some of the core inspiration you had when building this game?
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course, the RuneScape has been a big inspiration. I think the only thing is, of course, with the direct item trading, which I know that there's some people who would like us to have like everything become traded, but having it not be pay to win is just, it's one of our things that we care a lot about. That's just how it is. Mm-hmm. In terms of other games you can kind of compare it to, I mean, Diablo, I'd say in terms of the combat, because Emerson has that fast combat of an ARPG like Diablo, but the view of it is isometric. Which is more like reminiscent of a MOBA. So it would take something like League of Legends or Dota in that way, kind of especially in the term of like how you actually fight and the skill set. It's kind of like a combination of that and Diablo with the hack and slash. And then it's set in a persistent fantasy universe, which is more reminiscent of something like, you know, RuneScape, World of Warcraft, Argage, Albion, similar.
Very cool. Yeah. And from what I can see also, I mean, it looks like it caters to quite a sort of large variety of play styles within here. It seems like there's a strong PvP and PvE side of things, but there are clearly other opportunities, sort of other player types within the world. Yeah. I wonder if you could shed light on some of that.
Sure. I mean, one of the things we have is that you don't need land to actually play the game. You don't need anything to play the game. You just jump in and you can play. The game runs on anything. It's platform agnostic, which means that it can run on your browser, your mobile, your console, pretty much anything. That's the idea, that you just run in and you play. So how you want to play it is up to you. It's classless, so we're not forcing you to play anything specific. If you can, it's not that I want to bash World of Warcraft all the time. I love World of Warcraft and play it a ton. But one of the things in there, at least, and in pretty much any MMORPG, is that you're always kind of forced into a certain specialization in terms of like how you have to play, like, oh, you have to bring this type of class set or a skill set to raid or to some sort of boss you're defeating. And what we want is the basically the classes on the classes, what all the abilities to be defined by you. So you can kind of make this unique playstyle across all the abilities that is still useful. That is at least the want we have. Now, in terms of other things you can kind of do in the world, in terms of playing, I mean, you could just, in WoW, when I kind of stopped playing it actively, I used to just be in the marketplace, just trade all the time, make sure that that happened. I'm sure there'll be people just trying to trade all the time, trying to maybe just get people to use a piece of land. Or we're going to introduce some sort of like management skills or like management abilities, so you can actually get other people to manage your piece of land and kind of help draw people to it. So there's going to be all these different aspects of how to play the game. And I think that's good. I mean, in MMORPG at least, in any MMO, I would say that it's good to facilitate the different types of play that isn't just for the action-oriented person that grinds a lot and plays a lot, because there's a lot of type of players, people who like to build, people who like to trade, people who like to manage, and all these ones, there has to be room for them, but it can't, of course, be specifically focused on them, but the option and the need should be there available.
Mm-hmm. What one thing that jumped out just then real quick is you said also on consoles you'll be able to play it. what do you anticipate the timeline being on that?
It would be after release, of course. So at release, we're aiming for just the desktop and the browser. So after that, we're going to aim for mobile and consoles.
Awesome. I guess, curious what's different about your kind of approach and mentality that allowed you guys to see this opportunity where perhaps others hadn't, and, you know, sort of what excites you about, MMORPGs as well. I mean, obviously you've got a deep history with them, but curious to get your thoughts. Yeah.
It's always kind of been back in my head, of course, wanting to create these things and like create these worlds. I think a lot of us worked on some sort of MMO in the past. Our CTO built his own MMO when he was like 15. He actually built his own engine where at night, like tigers, they would get heightened abilities and senses, and the cubs would, you know, because it would protect the cubs more because it's night and all these like different things. And I think for us, it's just this the totalness of just encompassing all these things into a great game. Mm. And I don't know, when I see all these different games, always like they lack something. I don't know if it's pressure by publishers or time frames and stuff like that, but there's always something missing somehow. And we're kind of hoping to hit into that middle road where we're kind of taking all these bad ales out of MMORPGs and kind of making Imbosol to kind of push it forward. I mean, one of the main things, of course, is also that we're making this business model where we're kind of including the users. So the users kind of get fees of submitting or using, and they kind of take part in the whole economy around the game. And that's at least a big thing for us, kind of trying to drive the whole industry in this direction, because again, like I mentioned a couple of times now, at least we feel that it's always been there. It's just that it's kind of been, kept down by yep. publishers. And of course, it's because one of the main things is that they can't make any money on trading afterwards, you know, and because you could just trade outside or don't use their platform, but by using the blockchain, you can facilitate a trade. It doesn't matter where they do it, if it's on a secondary platform or a third party platform, it doesn't matter. You can still get a fee. And that little part, if it's just a small part of it, it's huge for the MMORPG, if you ask me. But it basically solved these huge problems about trading outside the game.
Totally agree. I think, that kind of restructuring of the economics of a lot of these, sort of business models in the game industry is what's super exciting about all of this me, for sure. You know, being able to share a portion of revenue with the player base, and thus you have that strong alignment. Could we double click on that real quick? And you just give a high level on, you know, what the capacity for users to participate in those economics is in the game? Like, how does that ultimately manifest in Ember Sword?
Of course. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things to kind of do this. So one of the things is just to play the game, and you don't have to pay anything. There's no starter fee. There's no subscription fee. There's nothing at all. You just jump in, you play. You can do PvE. You can do PvP. Basically, what you have to do is you have to find a boss on the event, or you have to find another player. And then when you defeat these, you have a chance of getting a drop. So every month, we'll be submitting a series of cosmetics into the game, like a list, and those will be spread out through the different events in the game, like PvE, PvP. And then you'll have to find those. And then when you find that, you put it on the market, you decide the price, you decide everything pretty much, you know, and we'll just take a small cut of the fee.
Very cool. I mean, yeah, you're clearly a very early mover in this space with a very high caliber team as well behind you. What are your thoughts on this transition from this kind of closed to open game economies more broadly? You probably qualify as pioneers in this space. So eager to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that needs to be always right as well. Like, instead of closing down the economy, we're opening it up. And we think that at least for the players or the users, that's kind of what they want, like these terms of like open economies. And I don't really see what the issue is with it. Well, of course, I mean, if it was on a centralized thing, like just doing like normally, that'd probably be a lot of shenanigans and stuff like that. I think one of the things like with Epic, with Fortnite, they had some sort of skin back. I can't remember the name of it though, but some sort of skin that was quite popular. People were trading it behind. I think it's like the people in, they're taking out the hard drives or something just to trade skins, you know?
Yeah. It was Skull Trooper, and then they re-added him.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, we kind of want to avoid because you've seen it so much more times. So at Imbersort, you know, cosmetics are more than just items. They're really just fully player-owned and tradable digital collectibles, you know, whose exclusivity and scarcity is, of course, proven by the blockchain. And I think that's quite huge versus something like Fortnite or otherwise.
Absolutely. And obviously the sort of value proposition of NFTs in the game context around, you know, facilitating all this trade and obviously not play to win stuff, but the cosmetic stuff makes the most sense. But yes. I'm curious, like, when did all of that kind of come on your radar? When did you first start to, understand the potential here and get excited around it?
Oh, wow. Well, I would say around 2016, probably when I started just thinking about it a little bit. I was working on another game there, though, and, you know, didn't really know where crypto was kind of going at the time, totally. You know, it's kind of been ups and downs, of course. You know how it is. But from that, it kind of just evolved. I was in a sort of like incubator with another game, and I just met someone there after I ended another thing. And, you know, it basically just... We talked about it, like, hey, man, this is a great idea. Mm-hmm. No, what do you think? And then before I know it, we were four guys and, you know, we had an idea. We were trying to seek funding.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty early on to have seen it, obviously well before sort of the SC721s and the whole NFT Ethereum picking up. Ethereum NFT thing, rather. I'm curious, like, yeah, what it's been like for you watching this landscape evolve. Obviously, Ethereum is the one that sort of built the momentum, but now seeing, you know, competing chains trying to facilitate similar stuff. If you could just comment at a high level on your perspective and all of that stuff.
Sure, of course. I mean, in terms of the NFTs and all that stuff, I mean, we just want things to be tradable, I'd say. I mean, the main thing, of course, all is also that it's tamper-proof. One of the main things of using NFTs and the blockchain is that in normal games, I mean, like Steam or pretty much any Steam game, there's a lot of fraud going on. And I think it's like a huge industry of fraud, actually. I think it's worth billions or something like that. Because people are actually scamming each other with all this middle-of-the-man stuff because you only need to trust someone specific. And I just think that for gaming with NFTs, all this just plays perfectly. In terms of using specific chains and all the technicals, all this stuff, I don't think it's super important as long as it works for the user. I kind of what you will be picking is what kind of suits you, because there's a lot of different chains out there, so different side chains and all this stuff with NFTs and all this. It's quite a science in itself, but I don't think it's like the high level of it is that's super important in terms of just having something that actually works and executing it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. In terms of other games enabling crypto, you know, mechanics and integrations, how do you view yourselves within the market and sort of what are your ambitions in this space?
Well, I would say that, you know, like I mentioned in the beginning, we're pretty much gameplay first. That's kind of what we're going at. You should always get a bit of flack for that because, you know, a lot of people like us to take a different approach, of course, a more financial approach to it. But that's never really been our reasoning for this and kind of been very steadfast on really focusing on the gameplay and the game being good and that being like the main reasoning for all of it. So to us, I mean, blockchain is great. We love it, but we don't think that blockchain suddenly is like solve everything or the cryptos or NFTs. You know, it's a piece of software that you use like Microsoft Access Database or anything at all. And you kind of fine tune it to what you want. I heard someone say, like, if anybody says that NFTs is one specific thing, they're lying, don't know what they're saying, or they don't know what they're talking about. I would agree. because I don't think that NFTs is one thing. I don't think blockchain is one thing. I don't think coins is one thing. It's everything and it's nothing, because you can do pretty much anything. I don't think you can define a piece of software to be something specific. It's kind of like how you use it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm curious then, like, you know, following on from that, what are some of the kind of interesting longer term ideas you've had for how, you know, crypto might permeate the sort of game industry more broadly? Obviously, Ethereum's built massive momentum. You see the crazy stats that it, you know, settled $1.5 trillion in economic activity in Q1. Obviously, this is, you know, it is ultimately the sort of tech stack you guys are building on top of. And there is a proximity to all of that, you know, financial momentum. What are your thoughts around that longer term?
Well, I mean, for us, longer term, of course, we're building everything in-house, kind of ourselves. We don't like depending on third parties, not because we don't like them, but more because Embersoft is quite a big game. It's an MMORPG. It's a lot different than, I would say, any other sort of normal game in terms of like the size and what it kind of encompasses. What we're thinking about for the total thing and kind of for the whole project is to kind of drive this notion forward, at least for the mainstream, to kind of open up other MMORPGs to take this sort of approach. Like, if it's up to me, I think all MMORPGs should do this and should allow players to own everything, kind of push it forward, let them be a part of the economy, all that stuff, because they kind of are already. I would say that anybody who plays MMOs kind of have the same feeling as me on this, and they kind of know. It's like, it's just something that's in the back of your head if you're playing these games. Like, you know, they already feel that it's theirs and somehow. And at least that's kind of what we want to drive forward in terms of our technology and the game. Of course, you want to expand on it. You want to make it more seamless. You want to make it more fast and all that stuff. But otherwise, we kind of felt that we built all the things already that we want to facilitate this game. And then for taking it further, that would be more of a bigger project, because we already kind of thought of most of it. I'd say one of the things is, for example, patches. So if you have a patch in the game today, you have to download, you have to wait. We don't have patches. You can just play the game and you'll just stream meanwhile, you know. It's basically Stadia that works.
Very cool. Very cool. And then my favorite question, you know, to what extent do you subscribe to this idea of a metaverse, which I'll define as a persistent live digital universe that affords individuals a sense of agency, social presence, and shared spatial awareness, along with the ability to participate in an extensive virtual economy with societal impact?
Oh, yeah. Oh, with the metaverse. We talk a lot about that. There's always a bunch of talks on that. I think that there's a lot of different reasons. Like, everybody kind of wants it to be this sort of player online thing. And I think that we are really far from that, especially in terms of VR and stuff like that. I mean, the whole thing about VR, I love VR. But if you know the five driving forces of technology in terms of adaption, stuff like that, VR is on a quite low scale there. And there's pretty a long way before it comes to that. So a total metaverse, I don't really think that it's coming anytime soon. There's even the thing about what you say, like interoperability. Those are the things we're working on now, making deals with other games to kind of use it. But it's not the same. It's not like I can't take a sword from Imbersword or something and use it in another game that is still a sword. That game still has to do something specific to make that sword work or something like that. So I subscribe more to the notion of what you would call maybe like digital twins, if you know that term. Mm-hmm. Where it's more like it's this twin person, not twin personality, like this twin thing of you online and offline, which can be a bit different. It can be a bit of the same. And I think that's more where we are right now. I think that we're working towards the metaverse and we would all like things to kind of work together, but it's not that simple. It's definitely something that's going to take a lot more years for us to kind of get into and kind of figure out how exactly can we make everybody work together. But at least with blockchain now, if we're using the same blockchain, it's not easier than, you know, prior to actually having blockchain.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree on it's, it's not happening anytime soon, I don't think, but it is a fascinating idea. I think on the 10, 20, maybe on the 30 year horizon at the upper end, I don't know. We'll see. Exciting things though. Exciting things. You know, a game of Embersword's scope, you guys obviously have a deep background in game development. I'm curious what some of the more perhaps unexpected or, surprising difficulties with building around crypto were, when you went to actually start building this thing. Obviously, it's nice in theory, but wonder how it was in practice, because I'm sure there are all sorts of issues.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, like, don't get me started. But we spent a ton of money, like really a ton. I always don't want to say how much, but it's a lot. just exploring all these different things internationally, locally, figuring out like even with the coin, NFTs. You know, there's a lot of stuff even from the EU. There's stuff in the FTC with the no action order. There's so much stuff to kind of look into and kind of figure out all the time, make sure they're doing the right thing, figure out that the IRS is on your ass or something like that. So I would say that it's quite the science. It takes a lot. I would say, you know, take a good approach to it in terms of, you know, get a financial controller, get a CFO, get some people who understand international taxes, international merchant, stuff like that, and, you know, be ready and kind of be on top of all this stuff. I think that it's quite annoying. I think that I don't think that we should need all these different things, at least when you're buying NFTs. I don't see it different from buying any sort of game on Steam or a DLC on Steam. I mean, it needs your name, address, email, phone number, whatever, and I think that's it. I think everything else is kind of ridiculous, unless you're buying for maybe some insanely huge amount, then of course, yeah, sure, you probably need something just to make sure, of course, right? But otherwise, I think that it's totally ridiculous that governments in any way kind of want to butt in on this. And I see a lot of countries who are kind of like really working against their own interest by kind of combating this. And they have like these really outrageous views on it. Kind of like, I think some currencies, they even want you to like pay every time you transfer something from a wallet. Like even if you transfer it internally on some sort of site, they see it as this sort of transfer. They kind of have to pay taxes off and stuff like that. So I think in terms of this, at least, what we need to do is to educate our governments in what is actually happening. And we have to make sure that they don't stifle innovation as they would love to do in normally, you know?
Totally agree. I think a lot of the, you know, it falls under the sort of KYC and AML stuff that just asphyxiates so much of this activity. I'm trying to play my part here in the UK. There's a parliamentary, I don't know what, but they don't appear to listen to anything. So we'll see. You know, given you guys have battled through it and developed your own sort of playbook, and you also, you know, you said you're looking forward to more of the industry doing more of the same. Will you guys maybe share your learnings, like, you know, open source the playbook once you guys have figured it all out with other game developers?
Well, in terms of making it open source, I mean, I'll see too. I mean, you'd probably kill me if I said it. So, yeah, well. But I mean, we are looking into doing something. I'd say I can't really divulge too much of it right now, but we are looking to kind of try and create these sort of norms somehow that could run on other MMOs. But that's without saying too much, of course. But I mean, that's what we want, at least. We kind of want to drive this forward. We also want to share a lot. I mean, once we're more done now. So I could say that, you know, we actually started out working on Unity. So Unity was making this small thing called Unity Tiny, which is sort of like a lightweight version of Unity where you can launch things to the browser and kind of make it faster. But it didn't really work out for us. So we took things into our own hands and kind of made our own engine actually instead, where everything works. And I think that that's one of the kind of the main things in this as well, that sometimes you just have to make something to make it work.
Very cool. And then, yeah, I guess I'm curious what you see as sort of the primary path to adoption of these ideas of NFTs, of, you know, using crypto in your sort of game economy to facilitate, I don't know, royalty structures and take those fees and whatever. Like what do you see as, yeah, that sort of path to adoption? Obviously you mentioned there's the government kind of cumbersome regulation. Obviously there are the big game developers, the sort of incumbents who are hesitant to engage still. And obviously then you've also got consumers beginning to wake up to all this cool stuff. So how do you look at that?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the five forces of what's called like the five forces of driving technology impacts and changes, those are computer hardware cores, game software power, social acceptance, and other industry successes and industry experimentation. So I would think in terms of blockchain, at least, that this is rising quite fast. I think it wasn't that long, like Sega, even announced they're doing some sort of NFTs. I know that there's a bunch of stuff in Hollywood that are working on, a bunch of things with NFTs. I think that it's kind of creeping into everything right now. So in terms of adoption, I would say that it's definitely going forward. Computer costs, you know, probably graphics card would have to go down in order for things to kind of go up. Other than that, I think that the main thing for adoption, at least in my opinion, and not talking about these like driving force here, is to have something that is easy for the user. Like for us, one of the core philosophies and concepts of the Imbersort is that you should know that it's blockchain this. You can go in, you can play the game. Yeah, I mean, if you get something like an item, it goes into your wallet, but that's a managed wallet that we're doing, like custodial. So when you get these things, when you get some value, you decide like, okay, maybe I want to transfer it into my own wallet. And that's like the first decision you have to make, like first when there is some sort of value for you to move. That's the main thing I'd say. Like if I have to set up my wallet, my own wallet from the beginning, I don't know anything about blockchain and stuff like that. You know, that's already like, oh, I have to use MetaMask, whatever. It's like, no, let's make it easy for the user. Make it easy for the user to think about services, think about making it as easy and seamless for the user so they don't have to be annoyed by anything.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Heading into the closing questions here, very curious. What is your favorite video game ever?
My favorite video game ever. Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I probably would say Counter-Strike because the original Counter-Strike 1.6, because that's what I used to play all the time. We loved Half-Life Engine, stuff like that. But if you want to talk to me about like game, I would probably say Monkey Island. That's my favorite childhood game. It's a click and play game that pretty much taught me a bunch of stuff when I was young. It taught me to think outside the box. It's a thing I think that's missing in a lot of games today, that like it's challenging you to think outside the norm and kind of try things that is normal and then from that kind of learn. And today I think a lot of stuff is quite cookie cutter. We used a lot of games in terms of history and stuff like that. There isn't really much of those anymore. That's a shame.
That's really interesting. I've never come across it. So I'm going to do some digging this weekend. We'll see how that goes. And then, yeah, beyond games, what is the most impactful digital experience you've ever had?
Oh, the most impactful digital experience I ever had. That's a tough one, I'd say. The only thing that kind of sticks out into my head is when I was quite young. I like the first time I actually saw the internet way back when I had to like dial something, I thought it was a one page. So learning that it wasn't a one page, like I basically called different bunch of computers. You'd have like this BBC and all this stuff. So you can kind of get in and look at news. That was kind of a big revelation to me, how you could connect from a computer to computer and then kind of serve up this sort of experience to other people. That's also when I started building what's called MUDs, like multi-use dungeons. So I used to build like text dungeons back then, you can kind of go into where people just call our phone number and then they could kind of try and play it. My dad would hate it because, you know, it would take up the whole phone line. But to me, at least, that is kind of what kind of brought me into this. It just stands out very clearly in my mind, sitting in QBasic and doing all these things.
That's such a sweet story. You thought it was just the one page when you first came across it.
Exactly. I was so disappointed, actually.
This is what all the fuss is about. I love it. out of all the books you've ever read, which one has resonated with you the most?
Oh, which one has resonated with me the most? Well, I would say it's Starship Troopers. It's my personal favorite book. And you have to read the book. I think the book is... Yeah, I mean, surely someone would say, oh, Starship Troopers, is that movie thing. It's like, sure, it also has a movie. The movie is fun and everything, but it has nothing to do with the book. And I think that the novel or the book is quite amazing.
Yeah, I must admit, I fall into the only having watched the movie camp. So I'll look into that one too.
Yeah. I'd say the book is a million times better. I'm a, what do you call, like a half-breed. My mom is from the Philippines. My dad is from Denmark, and the lead story guy is actually Rico. In the book, he's actually a Filipino. So,
oh, there you go.
Exactly. They had to make him American in the new one. So,
yeah, no. Screw that.
I like Casper. He did a good job. So,
we've got through all the questions I wanted to run through. Really appreciate you coming on and sort of sharing your thoughts around here. For those listening that want to follow along and sort of any closing remarks you might have, you know, where should they follow you guys? I think you might have some stuff upcoming on the roadmap if you want to talk through.
Of course. So we're going to do a land sale very soon. I would say to everybody, go to embersword.com and sign up for our newsletter. Join everybody. You'll get to know right away when we're going to launch some land for you to buy, and it will be very soon. So we'd say go there now and take a look. Otherwise, come to our Discord, discord.gg/embersword, which is where everybody is. We have a lot of contests going on there, like the Fandibus Cup. It just ended, but we'll have another one where you can kind of win stuff from the game and et cetera.
And what exactly do those tournaments look like, out of curiosity at the moment?
Oh, sure. Well, one of the, like the Fenables Cup, the first one we did, people actually had to make pictures. Like you, one of them was making memes. Other ones was kind of music quizzes, or maybe a quiz about the lore in Imbasort. And then from those, each nation has a series of points and you can participate as single individual in each nation. So when you join our Discord, you'll be asked to actually join one of these four nations in the game. You'll be put in the channel with everybody else who's in that nation. And then together you guys fight in this contest to kind of, you know, make sure that one of the nations is on top.
Very cool. Very cool. Mark, thank you once again. It's been a pleasure and I'm super excited to follow along for Ember Swords launch. Well, at least land sale and then launch, you know, can't come soon enough.
All right. Thank you, Pierce. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much.